Okay, I think it's time to get to the next session. Bill Jordan with Baylor University. He will introduce himself to you and take it away.
I noticed that my title is a little more grandiose than I ought to admit. It really should be some aspects about the nature of Christian engineering. That is a very broad topic, and by no means am I going to do all of that. But I'm a mechanical engineering department chair at Baylor University. I've been there for 11 years. And this is a real outgrowth of some of my past, but I want to start off with a question. This is a photograph, two photographs taken in the spring of 2015 near the town of Ferrier, Haiti. And we took some students and put in solar panels to become businesses in a number of rural villages outside of Ferrier. So if we're talking about Christian engineering, my two rhetorical questions, which I hope to answer by the time we're done, is this a Christian solar powered system? And were the people who created this doing Christian engineering? So let's think about that as we move through. This is something I've thought about a great deal over the last many years. I was a metallurgical engineer for a steel company for 5 years in Ohio. Then I went back and got a PhD and became a professor at Louisiana Tech, a public university, for 20 years. And now I've just finished my 11th year at Baylor University, which is a private Christian university. And the cultures of the public and private Christian universities are themselves very, very different. The question is, what's engineering? There's a lot of talk about engineering, scientific method, less about engineering method. This is kind of a complicated definition, but I like it. And Billy Keene, who's now retired from the University of Texas, he said, engineering is the use of engineering heuristics to cause the best change in a poorly understood situation within the available resources. He then says that heuristic is anything that provides a plausible aid or direction in the solution of a problem, but is in the final analysis unjustified, incapable of justification, and fallible. So engineers solve problems that we frequently don't understand very well with resources that are always much more limited using techniques that we can't prove. And that's a lot of the uncertainty that practice engineering. We've still gotten very good at it. We have smartphones and iPads and all sorts of really cool devices, but at the heart, a lot of our engineering practice is based on things we cannot itself prove. If we want to look at Christian engineering, I think it relates to the first people who are being called as Christians. One of my colleagues at Baylor, Byron Newberry, several years ago, wrote about calling, and I like his statement. He says, it's the divine call or summons to live a life of transcendent purpose, to use one's distinct gifts in the service of God's people and for the stewardship of God's creation. This is by no means limited to full-time ministry. A lot of times people talk about, I've received a calling to be a minister or a missionary. Rarely do you hear someone say, I've received a calling to be a civil engineer. But I think civil engineers who are Christians should receive that sort of calling. So we need it. It could be for every Christian in our own specific areas of work. But let's take a look at a little more amplification. Two of my other colleagues at Baylor, Ken Ventura and Steve Eisenbarth, there's a long quote here. I think an important point they say is, therefore, even though there may not be a specific application of the Christian faith principles in every engineering problem, students can often be reminded to take a step back and look at the big picture of his presence and sustaining activity. As an engineer works through the extrinsic elements of a design artifact, a Christian worldview can provide a basis on which to consider and make the necessary value judgments and choices required by the engineering design process. Something our previous two speakers talked about was why should you make the things you make, among other. That's one of the other issues you raised. And that's an important point from a Christian engineer. Not everything we can make should we make from a Christian perspective. So how do you decide what you're going to work on and what you're not going to work on? There's been a number of books in the last few years, in the last 30 years, that I found helpful. One of the older ones I really liked is by Monsma and others in the 80s, Responsible Technology. Then The Fabric of This World by Lee Hardy, and then Kingdom Calling by Amy Sherman in 2011. And if you read through these, you see different perspectives to the idea of calling of professional level people. Lee Hardy writes, "An initial attempt to formulate the principles of vocational choice was made by Protestant reformers of the 16th century. They are firmly convinced that all of life, even on the everyday life of everyday work, ought to be lived to the glory of God." Amy Sherman chose a verse to represent her whole book. That's from Proverbs 11, "When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices." Oz Guinness had wrote a book a number of years ago just called The Call. Now, I find that to be very helpful. He says, "Calling is the truth that God calls us to himself so decisively that everything we are, everything we do, and everything we have is invested with a special devotion, dynamism, and direction lived out as a response to his summons and service." And that includes things we do day to day. It includes teaching statics, you know, or circuits or whatever. One verse that's been very meaningful to me, if we think of Christians and Christian engineers, is what Jesus said in Luke 12. "For everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked." We've all been blessed with many things, not just economically in the Western culture, but certainly in terms of intelligence and abilities, and God expects us to use them. You know, that I find that that resonates or overlaps greatly. The ASME code in its fundamental canon says, "Engineers shall hold paramount the safety, health, and welfare of the public." So even the secular engineering codes talk about using our skills to help people. So I want to make a distinction between Christian engineers and Christian engineering. Christian engineers are Christians who practice engineering. You need to be competent, you need to work hard, and you need to help create things that are useful to people. You won't be employed if you don't do that. But Christian engineering is you have some explicit goal, and I had to think how I want to phrase this. I say advancing God's agenda in the world. That can still mean secular day-to-day activities. I think iPads can help advance further God's agenda in the world because I use it for Christian purposes. So it can include a lot of things besides just directly helping poor people. The nature of technology, again, Mosma's book, Responsible Technology, the author, the second one, co-author of the co-presenter of the last presentation wrote the second book, God's Beyond Faith. Paradise. And God's I found Faith. That to be very helpful. My friend, Steve Vanderleest at Calvin, I'll mention his name later, has said something that's controversial in some engineering circles, even Christian circles, but it's something I agree with. He says, when we talk about technology, that technology is not ethically neutral. It is biased towards certain uses, persuades the user towards particular actions, and has built-in values in its structure. And let me give you my own example of that. Engineers love computers, so we solve problems computers can solve because computers can solve them. And sometimes we ignore problems that are not so easily solvable by our computer technology. So the use of the computer is not neutral. I'm not going to try to say it's good or bad, but it does predispose us to do things that use particular technologies. I think a critical issue of how we practice engineers as Christians is our view of the overall culture. And a book that came out, I believe, in the 1950s by Richard Niebuhr called Christ and Culture. It's one of the more significant books I've read in my lifetime. He talks about, when he said Christ, you could say the church, you know, if you want to. But he classifies five different ways in which we can relate to the rest of the world. So let's take a look at each of these in turn. Christ against culture basically says there's an inherent conflict continuously. Culture is basically almost all bad. Of course, the church is hopefully all good, and they're going to be fighting all the time. For an engineer who believes that, you may not worry about the rest of the world. You know that you're not going to, from this perspective, you're not going to reform culture. It's going to stay bad. So I can just stay in my cubicle and do good work. And I think you should do good work. But I think that, I guess I'm saying I'm not in that group. Yeah, there's some issues there. The Christ is of culture in perspective is that culture is just fine. So again, you may just concentrate on your individual job. You don't see a need to change culture. Maybe just in the general sense of iPads are a step above calculator, in that sense, but not in terms of transforming it. The Christ above culture is probably the hardest of these to describe. Christ is sitting in judgment on a culture, kind of looking around at the world. And I'm giving the example here of the issue of poor people. And here's a culture that may not help poor people. So the engineer needs to join with Christ and sit in judgment on the society and try to do something in their area. The Christ and culture and paradox basically kind of says Christ and culture, they're not fighting. They really just don't have much to do with each other. You do your Christian thing on Sunday or Wednesday night. You do your work thing on Wednesday or Thursday morning. And you don't worry about your culture. You just do your job. Then the last one, Christ, the transformer of culture. And there's a variety of different ways that you could be in this position. One is you want to change the lives of the people through the work that you do. Another approach is to say, Christ transforms culture through my work, that I just use my job as a means for evangelism and discipleship. I certainly support evangelism and discipleship with people you work with. I have a little bit of a problem of using people just as an instrument. I am, as I'll say, in the next slide, I am in the Christ, the transformer of culture group, that doing high-quality engineering is the best way I can make a contribution to the advancing of God's agenda in the world. To be honest, while I don't go to what would be called a Reformed church, that's very much in the spirit of Calvin and others. Well, I think that we also need to work to try to help our fellow Christian engineers. And I'm not going to take the whole 30 minutes here because I want to have some time of discussion about various things. I think we all value professional societies. I'm a member of, in addition to ASA, I'm a member of ASME. I'm a member of the American Society for Engineering Education. I'm a member of ASM, which used to be American Society for Metals. It's now broader materials. And that we are helpful to me in many ways. It's also important to have as Christian societies like ASA where we can discuss faith issues. I have been a member of ASA for, I don't know the exact number, more than 30 years. It's been very helpful to me. I'm an engineer and I probably have more fun at the engineering sessions than any of the others. I really enjoy the whole conference. I've really enjoyed the plenary speakers this time because it helps think in a broader sense. However, to be honest, I have a lot of engineering colleagues, not just at my university, but people I know who work in industry who, to be honest, are never going to come to ASA. I wish a lot of them would, but they're not. So I think there is a need for something aimed specifically at Christians who are in the engineering world. So let me tell you about something that's going on. For 20 years, there's been an informal group of people, and I've been part of it, but I didn't start it, putting on what we call the Christian Engineering Conference every other year, immediately following the ASEE, American Society for Engineering Education. So in 2015, we met at Seattle Pacific, for example. And next year, we're going to meet at Cedarville because ASEE is going to be in Columbus. We've been calling ourselves the Christian Engineering Society, but we never existed legally until about 4 weeks ago. We are now a legal, not-for-profit professional society incorporated in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And this is what you see now are the five people who are members of it, because you had to have founders in the incorporation document. So we are working on the issue of membership fees and all that sort of thing. But you see the names that are here. I'm the founding vice president. Steve Vanderleest, who's been leading the Christian Engineering Conference, is the president. Gail Ermer from Calvin is the secretary. Melanie Plett from Seattle Pacific is the treasurer. And Ted Song from John Brown is the webmaster. So there's a site here. I will give you a handout that shows you this material. But let me go ahead and pass it out. I didn't want to do it too soon because I didn't want to give away what I was going to say to begin with. So this is... Some of these are quotes from our handout. Who are we? We are a group of individuals interested in the relationship of Christianity and engineering and technology. So our, I'll let these get passed out and I'll say a little more. Our faith informs the choices we make as engineers, particularly questions related to purpose and priorities. That's Jack talked about that earlier. We find God's calling our lives in all its aspects, personal and professional. We are interested in applying biblical principles such as justice and stewardship to the design of technology. God's special concern for the poor and disadvantaged touches our hearts so that we look for opportunities to use our skills as engineers in ways that builds God's kingdom. But we're not just concerned about that. That's something I'm really concerned about, and I think Christians should be, but we have a broader interest. It's not just about technology for the poor. We see all technological development as part of our stewardship, you know, and unfolding of creation. And it's a powerful tool we need to use in an appropriate manner. So we're working on details about membership. We don't know what the membership fee will be. We should roll that all out sometime in the next couple of months. Something that was waiting on us having a legal corporation and a mailing address and all those important details is that we're going to have an online journal. That will be Baylor University has agreed to host for us, Referee Journal. And I will submit those documents this week when I get back to Waco. So we hope to have the journal have an issue by next summer. And we're going to be meeting at Cedarville University next summer. I want to, this may seem odd to promote one group at another group. So I want to make the point, I've got people like me will continue to be actively involved with the ASA. I find the broader set of topics very useful. But to be honest, as I look at who was at last year's CEC, who was also here at ASA, as far as I can tell, is two people, Dominic Collier and myself, were at the CEC and ASA. So there's not a lot of overlap. I wish there was more overlap, but there's not. So we feel that in the particular discipline of engineering education, we need to be able to talk about our discipline in a more detailed manner. If you think of there was a session yesterday and a session today that were largely about engineering. We typically meet from Wednesday evening to Friday noon following the ASWE ending at Wednesday at 5. So it's about a day and a half conference. And if you think of these two sessions kind of expanded to 2 days. You know. But some of the things you heard today were things you could have easily heard at that other meeting. But the point is, we have more time to talk about specifically engineering and technological issues. So again, while I think our own discipline societies such as ASME and IEEE are important, Christian engineers, I think, need to have a place of their own. I felt very welcome at ASA, but I think there is a reason and justification to have our own group. I don't see these as in competition. I clearly think as the CEST evolves over time that we will work out ways to do things together and get more people involved with both. I'd like to see some of our CEC friends come here. We'd love to have some of you who are here come to Cedarville next summer and spend time with us. So the point is that Christian engineering is more than just engineers who are Christians. It involves the practice of engineering with the goal of advancing God's agenda, and how our view of how faith interacts with culture has a dramatic effect. Again, if you've never read Niebuhr's Christ and Culture, it's not a complicated book for an engineer. I would strongly urge you to read it. It's still in print, even though it came out about 60 years ago. And so the question is this a Christian solar-powered system, and were the people who created this doing Christian engineering? I would say the answer to that is yes in both cases. Now, could secular people have done that? Yeah. I don't know too many secular people would go to a rural village outside a small town in Ferrier to build a solar-powered business for poor people. I'm sure there may be some good-hearted secular people, but this is certainly an example of a Christian students at a Christian university. We took 13 students and 3 professors to Haiti a year ago to do this project. And the net result was 5 solar-powered businesses. We created businesses that most people here, it wouldn't work in the U.S. It's a solar power, it's basically a cell phone charging station. There are people in rural Haiti and all over the developing world who have cell phones who live in not just homes without electricity, but live in towns without electricity. And they have to go to the big city and take half a day to charge up their cell phone once a week. If they could charge it up just down the street, it'll bring money into the community or keep money in the community and provide a service to the people. So that's what I wanted to say. I appreciate any feedback. Again, you're welcome next year. If you go to that website, we will roll out membership and some of those other details. But as far as I know, this is about the first public pronouncement of it. I mean, we just got that handout agreed to on, I believe, Thursday of last week.
Thank you. We have 5 minutes for questions and interactions.
Yeah.
So I actually saw the Facebook post about them incorporating. And it seems interesting to me, but I'm just curious, do you have ideas as to how you could get people, for instance, like I work in the industry and I come to the ASA for many of the same reasons, out of personal interest.
Yeah.
I don't have a need to publish anything.
Yeah.
But how can we draw people to the ASA or like the CES conference? Because it is a big commitment of money.
I think we just need to do personal outreach. Yeah. Mm. When we first started this conference, we called it the CEEC, Christian Engineering Education Conference. And we took out the word education, although it's largely educational related, because we wanted industry. So last year in Seattle, we probably had about 80 or 90 people, and I'd say 5 or 6 people from industry, which is probably the most from industry we've ever had. So I think a lot of it's personal outreach, because this is not circles that the average industry person will never hear of the CES or the ASA.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the problem, too, is that, like, my employer would not pay for me to come here or there.
Yeah.
And so it really has to come from a real deep personal interest, I think.
Yeah.
Why are you killing ASA?
What?
Why are you killing ASA?
I'm not doing anything to ASA.
Sure looks like you are to me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Why do we have to break up? Why do we need yet another one?
Well, this,
why can't we be together?
This group did not start with an ASA. This is not moving out away from ASA. This is a group that had, other than Dominic and myself, nobody from the CEC has ever been to ASA.
So why don't you bring them here?
I don't think
I'm
they would come.
It's just too sad.
We could bring them here.
Well, do that.
We could have the other organization as well.
No, you don't need to. There aren't enough of us.
Bill, do you think that theologians and sociologists and entrepreneurs from other disciplines will come to CEC?
The industry people we've had have been largely entrepreneurial type people.
Engineers or broader?
Engineering entrepreneurial.
So Lenny and I were arguing for a transdisciplinary gathering. To seek God's direction on innovation and a process thereof. Your organization, I think, fills a niche that ASA is not meeting, the need ASA is not meeting, and that's too bad. I wish that we were, that we were attractive to the people that you attract. Nonetheless, the people that I think would come to ASA are ones who are very multidisciplinary in their thinking and their approach. And perhaps you are attracting what I would call pure engineers.
I'd say that's a fair statement.
So in response to Ruth's agony, what can we say? We're attracting different kinds of people?
I think it's clear we're attracting different types of people, because if you think of it again, Dominic and I don't know of anybody else who really goes to both or has ever gone to both. Yeah, yeah.
I don't have any criticism or comment on the establishment of this organization, but I wondered if you were aware of Engineers Without Borders, which was founded by Dick Herring, the former retired CEO of Ball Aerospace. He's a Christian, and he started 20 years ago Engineers Without Borders, specifically for a lot of the goals you're talking about. He's trying to bring in people that are not necessarily academics like myself. I teach engineering. He's although there are people like myself involved, He's trying to bring in people that are practicing engineers so that, for example, when they had the earthquake in Pakistan a few years ago and people were going to freeze to death over the Christmas season, he was able to rally over 100 practicing engineers that could immediately fly to Pakistan and deal with the situation, building very safe temporary shelters so that people didn't freeze to death and starve to death. And it was a very practical solution. And it seems to me that's the kind of thing you're talking about, things where you can have engineers address.
Well, this goes far beyond just that. This is any way that, you know, all Christian perspectives on engineering, not just appropriate technology or missions work.
Yeah, that was just an example of what they do. I mean, they do stuff domestically, too. So you might coordinate with some of the other organizations. The Materials Research Society, which meets twice a year, is very large, and they have a Christian contingent that always has in a separate room their own thing that goes on, and the IEEE does the same thing. So, you know, it might be a good idea to coordinate. Rather than to start something new, it might be a good idea to kind of coalesce groups that already exist. Yeah.
But we've been talking about whether we should create this group for more than 10 years. I mean, because we've been putting on this conference every other year for 20 years. Now, that's long before I got involved. So I raised the issue, I believe, in 2005, should we create a society? And there wasn't sentiment for it at that point. Yeah?
Since this is an ASA conference, and some people might perceive that you've now formally announced an entity that's been out there, but now it's formalizing and coagulating, and now looks to some might be a competitor. This happens all the time, right? I just would offer that that an either or is one way of looking at it. A both and is another way of looking at this, and to look at it as an ecosystem phenomenon. And how are you going to? Something's changing in your ecosystem, and how do you appropriately respond to that to everyone's advantage to support the ecosystem as well as the participants of the ecosystem? And I realize that there's emotion in all that, as a, you know, you might feel it's competitive and so on, but you know, I think this is a neat opportunity to include Engineers Without Borders, CES, ASA. You've got, I mean, I think that's, what's, anyway, obviously, you could do both and, right?
I certainly didn't intend to stir up things today or to upset people today, because I see these as very complementary groups. I see these groups as appealing to a group that will never come here, for the most part. Yeah,
I've gotten emails, you know, over the years from the group that just look like pretty much engineering education, which I think is great for you, you know, Dominic, and I'm sure most of the stuff, but, you know, I didn't go to a Christian school for my engineering education, undergraduate or graduate, so maybe if I did, I'd appreciate, you know, more the need to support something like this, but it didn't look like it was really the stuff I was most interested in. If you have a critical mass of people that are mostly educators, you know, you have 80 or 90 educators and 5 or 10 industry, you know, you're papers and everything, your subjects covered, are going to probably necessarily follow the, you know, the majority, so I don't know.
Is Ray Carlson in the room, the next speaker? Keep talking now.
Well, let me just respond to that quickly. We don't just have professors from Christian universities attending the conference, the Christian Engineering Conference. We have several professors of engineering from secular universities at the last conference, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, just still being in
communication. Do I have a comment on your Christ and culture? One way of, I think Niebuhr, it was actually a very successful book, but I think he got it wrong. I think culture is always an outcome, not an input. And to change culture, you change the OS. And one of the things that engineers may or may not be aware of, I don't know, but they are on the input side of culture. They, as well as architects, engineers have a huge impact on culture. But it's not for the sake of culture. That's always an output. It is for the sake of value. and serving lives, as you've put it. So I think engineers actually have a tremendous responsibility and stewardship and impact, way more than Niebuhr could ever even imagine. And you don't go around creating culture, sorry, Andy Crouch. Culture is simply an artifact. It's value that you create. And that's, I think engineers understand that, particularly institutional. Yeah.
That's very astute. And the proof of that is an iPhone. It's a piece of engineering that has completely changed the culture.
Because it was valued.
Right? For good and for bad, and we can all make a big list of dysfunctions that come from the technology. We can make a big list, but it reflects values. The phone, the product itself, reflects culture and is an outgrowth of culture. So that is very, very true. And most engineers don't think about that very much at all.
But you all are at the leading end, actually. You may not realize this, but you are. You're at the leading end. You are input into culture. And the people who get credit for culture, artists, and, you know, all the others. Okay. It's engineers and artists.
Challenge be to just, would the challenge be is to, I'm sorry, to hone in on the right kinds of values?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Because that's what everybody sees the coolest thing.
Well, that's what Bill's saying. Yeah. Right. That's what Christian engineering is.
Right. So for example, so I'm in the internet marketing world all day long. I'm a marketer. Everything that has anything to do with cell phones is designed to increase engagement. All the salaries are based on that. All the bonuses are based on that. How many hours do they spend on Facebook? Bandwidth also. Everything in the cell phone industry is based on increasing consumption of bandwidth. Now in engineering, a group like yours would have a whole meeting and you would discuss, so what should we be optimizing? Because there's death by optimization when we've all experienced it.
Yes.
Your Christian engineering, that's inherently interdisciplinary. And there are plenty of engineering societies out there. So what's new here is the Christian piece of this. What are you going to do to limit membership, and what attitude would you have toward different Christian culture positions within this organization?
Okay, I don't think we would take a position on which position you should have with Christian culture. I mean, I think the group founded would be largely in the transforming culture group, but certainly just like on Origins with ASA, there's diversity among Christians.
Because of the timing? I just checked, and the fellow who is intended to be here at 4:15, Ray Carlson, has not shown up. He was only coming in for the day, but Lynn's concern is he may think he's on at 4:45 with rearranging. I just say that so that some of you who may want to be changing, the time is such that if you had wanted to go to another session, otherwise this is a free time to talk.
Is there, for instance, a statement of faith or a membership requirement like there is for ASA?
There will be. It will be relatively generic in terms of, we're not trying to limit people from any particular Christian tradition.
That's Chris.
Let's talk a little bit more, if we can, about Ruth's agony. I feel the need to try to soften that, which she's obviously feeling very strongly, and the reason is because she has worked for a dozen years, or perhaps more, to try to kindle, nurture CEST into a thriving, self-sustaining, ongoing subgroup within ASA. And here sits the long-serving chair of CEST, which kept it alive by virtue of his own newsletter that he basically browbeat people to contribute to and edited and published. So, you know, sort of two people that made it happen. The problem being that engineers, by and large, don't do research, at least not publishable research. They do product development, or innovation, if you want. And so she feels a sense of personal loss, that she feels that she failed to create a self-sustaining, attractive place for engineers within ASA. And I feel a little bit the same way. The reason I feel comfortable at ASA is because, although I'm an engineer by degree, I did publishable research in the open literature for a number of years when I worked at the National Lab and again at the university. So I feel at home in the science community as well as in the engineering development community. But I'm probably the exception. And Ruth was hoping to find a place for those engineers who don't publish, who don't see themselves as scientists. And your departure, or your perceived departure, makes ASA all the more a pure science organization rather than an applied science and science organization. And that's, in my opinion, would be a loss to ASA, a narrowing of its focus.
Well, I have no intention of leaving ASA.
No, I know you don't. I know you don't.
Well, I mean,
I'm trying to probably read Ruth's reaction.
That one of the aspects of this organization is it wasn't formed by ASA people who were mad at ASA. It was formed by people, for the most part, who had never been to an ASA meeting, as far as I know. So it totally grew up outside ASA. I was the only one of that founding group that has ever, as far as I know, come to an ASA meeting.
I think she's afraid that people who have come to ASA in the past and might be thinking about coming will instead consider that a viable option and not be attracted here, but be attracted there because it's closer to the core of their lives. That's what I think she fears.
So Robert Frost Mending Wall said in it, good fences make good neighbors. Could you see, Jack, a future scenario of the fact that if a group of engineers starts to coagulate around CES, that boundary that's being built certainly is a boundary that may not have been there as explicitly as it now is as a result of 4 weeks in nonprofit status and so on, could actually be beneficial to the broader ecosystem of both science and engineering. So it would require from ASA a thoughtful response